Oh yeah, welcome to another episode of the On This Grind podcast, where we talk about life lessons learned from the music business. And this episode is entitled, The F Word That Rappers Are Scared to Say. Now we all know the F word that rappers aren't scared to say, which I won't say right now, but to find out the one that they are, tune in. Hope you enjoy. I'm on this grind, gotta get my seat, I'm on this grind, yeah, I'm on this grind, working overtime, man, I'm on this grind, come on, yeah, I stay on this grind. Try and to fail, two things I hate. Succeed in this rap game, two things that's great. Words spoken from Jay-Z on the song H to the Izzo, which is really one of the songs that cemented Jay-Z's status as not just a rapper, but a hip-hop star, almost a pop star at the time, and just established him as one of the top artists worldwide, regardless of genre. And that's what this podcast episode is going to be about, that one word that he speaks in there, fail. We're going to talk about failure and failing, but we're not just going to dwell on that because, as Jay-Z says, it's about succeeding. And it's about the rap game. So I want to talk about how I found failure to be an essential component of success. Something you have to go through. Something that I've seen people try to avoid. And as a result, they haven't grown. And something that can really contribute to long-term success. So we're going to kick it off by talking about hip-hop. Because when you think about failure, it's not usually something you think of. Hip-hop likes to present an image of success. So this is really true in the late 90s, early 2000s, when hip hop videos were at their peak. A lot of million-dollar budgets or something close to it. So you'd see rappers in this bling bling era showing off their jewelry, showing off some fancy cars, a nice mansion. Now it doesn't matter if half that stuff was rented, because a lot of the time it was, but rappers would present this image of an over-the-top version of success. Now, sometimes that's done to compensate or overcompensate to show how bad things were, how far they've come, because a lot of rappers will come from impoverished backgrounds. And so they're telling you, hey, we went through the struggle, but we overcame those challenges and look at us now. So hip hop is about defying the odds, as I've talked about before. So overcoming those chances, the million to one odds, whatever you want to say. But even though they've made it this far, a lot of rappers just don't dwell on those losing times. You don't have a lot of depressing hip hop songs. I mean, in other genres, you'll hear singers get into it more, especially in country music, you know, that girl left me and things like that. But rappers usually, I'm not saying that they're positive, but they just don't really dwell on the losses, on the failure. So it might surprise you to hear me say Jay-Z when I am kicking off this podcast about failure, because he's not somebody we think of when we think of somebody who's failed at the rap game. But not only does he say that line, but in one of my other favorite songs, This Can't Be Life, Jay-Z has a line where he just reflects on his life at a point and he says, man, I'm going to be a failure, and goes on to expand about what that means. But he's talking about a point in his life where he didn't know if hip hop was going to work out for him or what was going to work out for him. Now, Jay-Z, like I said, had that song, H to the Izzo. Big smash. Some people just were like, who's this new rapper Jay-Z when they heard it? And others were like, oh, he's that guy who had Hard Knock Life, which he released maybe a couple years before that. And that was kind of one of his bigger songs at the time, too. He had a few that led up to this. But his first album is Reasonable Doubt, which he came out in 1996. And I remember when he came out with that album, because it was a really good album. You know, you could play it from beginning to end, great beats, great rhymes, great songs. And I thought, you know, Jay-Z's a good rapper, but I never considered him at that time to be somebody potentially the greatest rapper of all time. One of my friends was like, yeah, man, he's incredible. He's going to do it. He's the best rapper ever. And over time, that album has emerged as a classic, one of the top albums of all time, definitely in conversation for one of Jay-Z's best albums, but that just shows you how deep his catalog rolls. But that wasn't Jay-Z's debut. That's his first album that came out around the world. But before that, he was releasing music, and he came out with a song back in 1989, a song called Hawaiian Sophie. Now, you really have to be a hip-hop head or a huge Jay-Z fan to know about this song, because I'm a fan, and when I was growing up, I never heard of this rapper Jay-Z or this song Hawaiian Sophie. Jay-Z's coming up with his mentor, Jazz, rolling with Big Daddy Kane, performing around the country with him, but things don't really pop off. Things don't blow up, as we say as rappers, for several years. I mean, that's 7 years in between Hawaiian Sophie and Reasonable Doubt. Now, a lot went on between those 7 years. We're talking some of the golden years in hip-hop. And you'd see rappers like Snoop Dogg, Nas, Biggie, Wu-Tang Clan, Tupac blow up and have tremendous success. A lot of the times dropping their first album and being hailed as a classic, and the future looked really bright for those guys. So if you threw Jay-Z in the mix in say 94, it's like, who are you talking about? So you can imagine what Jay-Z thought of that time. Now, I know he was involved in a little something else too, but you know, with his amazing rap and songwriting skills, he had been like, what's going on? Why am I failing? Why am I releasing some independent releases that aren't catching on? Why am I getting turned down by every record label? And these guys are connecting. Yeah, they're good, but I'm better. So Jay-Z went through a lot of failure. But of course, as we know, he didn't give up. And as a result of saying, hey, nobody's going to sign me, I'm going to do it myself, he was able to build his company to the point that when he did get signed, he didn't get the average record deal. I remember one of those stories where he says, I looked at Russell Simmons at Def Jam and I said, hey, you don't remember me, but I remember you. Because Russell Simmons meets thousands of aspiring rappers, but Jay-Z remembers being turned down. So in order to sign this deal now that he has the leverage, now that he has the fan base in place, he wanted to negotiate a deal for his label, not just him as an artist, which is a much favorable deal. And having that control of his career now, I think is a big reason why he was able to achieve this longevity that he has. But Jay-Z had to go through that failure. And one of my favorite books that talks about failure is Robert Kiyosaki. Wrote a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Now, I'm not going to go into the whole book, but what that book is essentially about is having two father figures that have a different outlook on some issues in life. And one of those things is failure. And so Robert Kiyosaki talks about how losers quit when they fail. Winners fail until they succeed. And this is something I've seen throughout my career, because I've seen many talented musicians, a lot of talented rappers, throw in the towel because they just kind of expected to win. And kind of when the going got tough, they were out. Whereas less talented people who had that hunger and that drive to keep on going are the ones I've seen stick around and have careers instead of just one hit or two hits. And another reason for that is because failure defeats losers, but it inspires winners. And so you see that as an entrepreneur, because I think if you're an entrepreneur or a driven artist, when somebody says no to you, you don't just say, oh, well, I guess I can't do it. But it inspires you. It's like, I'm going to show you. So for Jay-Z, it's like, I'm getting turned down. Well, I'm going to come back stronger. I'm going to show you I could do this. So you see this on like an American Idol. Sometimes Simon will say, no, you can't sing it. And you'll see somebody just give up. And of course, if he really tears you to shreds, maybe you have to question yourself. But there's also the type of person who makes it that chip on your shoulder. Like, I'm just going to go harder. I'm going to remember that you fronted on me. And that's what's going to drive me. Now, of course, we're also taught this in school, where you want to avoid failure because that's a bad thing. You don't want to have answers wrong. So unless you're sure of the answer, that's when you put up your hand in class a lot of the time, because socially, sometimes people will laugh at you if you get the wrong answer, if you ask a bad question, things like that. And so we're taught to avoid it. But I think it's also one of those reasons why they say that those B and C students usually turn out to have more success in the quote unquote real world than just the A student that's studying and doing the work. And I think that can also be because you can plan as much as you want, but when that plan goes off a little bit, or when people critique your plan, what are you going to do about it? And sometimes that A student isn't used to failing. So when they fail, it becomes catastrophic. But I think that the music business is really about adapting and being flexible. Now, I recognize failure all throughout my career, failing all the time, man. But I want to talk about that failure that I had with my first album. I've talked about this a few times in the podcast of releasing my album, having a lot of excitement. And an album for an artist, especially your first album, is your baby, your first baby. Because when you have a baby, you feel like, oh, this baby's so cute, it's perfect, it's gonna accomplish so much. And you don't want anybody to say anything about your baby. And that's kind of how I felt when I came out with my album. I felt like this is gonna be my launching pad to rap superstardom. I had goals of selling 10,000, 20,000 copies. Man, it didn't even sell 1,000 copies. So it was a failure. I remember people criticizing it, that some people were like, your songs aren't good. Maybe you're just a good freestyler, but you can't write songs. So that was frustrating. People saying, hey, man, you sound like Nas. You got to develop your own sound. But the thing about having that album was I learned from it. I grew from it. And that there were a lot of successes from it. I realized how I had to go and hustle my CD. I couldn't wait for it to work. I got one of those songs made into a video, which played on Much Music. So there were some successes for it. And I think that's really what happens whenever you do business and do something in business. Is sure, there's some failures, some successes. It's not just cut and dry one way or another. Looking back, I'm glad I released it, because there's no perfect time to release an album. Now, in the early 2000s, that was your goal. Like, your goal is kind of like signing a record deal or releasing an album in hopes of signing a record deal. And that's how things were before then, too. But in that 2001 to 2005, it's kind of a gray area because you're seeing the changes in the music business. Now, fast forward to today, most new artists, the last thing to think about is an album. Chance the Rapper, who is a really popular rapper right now, has never sold an album. He's just making these mixtapes, putting them out there for free, which has been a great way for him to do it. But in those early 2000s, you wanted to come out with an album. And I saw some of my peers. Some of them were very talented. They were getting a lot of buzz. I mean, they were getting a little bit more buzz than me at the time. But I remember seeing one guy in particular just wait. And he just didn't want to release an album because he was like, I've seen what happens if you don't release it properly. And so he just waited. Now, he finally did release an album. It happened maybe a year ago. And it was the summertime. And I remember going on a popular blog and I saw that he released the album. And I was like, oh, this is surprising. He finally did it. Came out with the album. And then the next day, I didn't see anything about it. Because the thing with a blog site is that they will put up your album, but the next day there's something else out there. So that takes the place. So back in the day, if you were in a magazine or something, that would last for a month, or even a newspaper. Maybe it's a weekly. It would last for a week. But now it's just up and then it's gone and it's like crickets. So I think that all that time spent, all that waiting to release this big project, this big baby, and now it kind of goes unheard, which is the opposite result that you want. Flip side of it is, what happens if that artist came out with that album back in the day? You never know what could have happened. Maybe one of those songs would have caught on. Maybe, and that's the thing, is sometimes it's the song that you don't expect to catch on. But maybe if that song does, maybe you start following that lane and say, maybe I should do more songs like this. So you can really grow from that failure, that even if it doesn't sell 1,000 copies, there's things that you can learn from it and you could have released more albums. My man Classified is the perfect example when it comes to this, because he's released like 15 albums. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is his 15th album. And if you go back to his early albums, he'll be the first one to tell you, you know, they're not the greatest, but working on them, touring those albums, seeing what worked with the crowd is what led him to create better music, so that now when he goes out and does shows with his new music, it instantly connects with his fans because he knows what to give them. But he learned that through a little bit of trial and error. It's like my man Thomas Edison says, I've not failed. I just found 10,000 ways that won't work. So I failed on my first album. I failed in the Grant game too. Some people call me Grandmaster Flash, and I'll spend one of these episodes talking about Grants, but I remember failing when it came to Grants. I mean, I got a demo Grant. I got two demo Grants. Each of those is $2,000. So that was great. But now I want to go on and do an album Grant. And when I set off to do this album Grant, I recognized that the main component was a marketing plan. So I would spend a few weeks on this marketing plan, pages on pages, and then eventually I quit. I was like, man, it's just too much work. But I came back to it, came back to the marketing plan and polished it up. And I went to Staples so I could print it off, some pages in color, just added some nice little flash to it. I even had it coiled, almost like a book, which cost a little bit extra money, but I was like, hey, I'm going all out for it. So when I submitted that album grant, I was like, I'm going to get it. I sat on the jury before, so I saw what was good, what was working, what wasn't, and I felt like, man, they can't deny me. I felt I deserve victory. But what happens? I didn't get the grant. Now, not only didn't I get the grant, but I saw what happened. And what happened back in the day is that they would send you a letter, and on this letter, it would judge you in different categories. Now, the first half was about music. So everything from your lyrics to production to mixing to just songwriting in general would be scored. And it was a scale of let's say, very good is the best to needs improvement. That's your failure at the other side. And for music, I had very good in every category. Straight A's. Go down to the bottom part, the business side of things. This part was your marketing plan, your bio, realistic plan, your photo, press photo. And in this section, I had all needs improvement, all F. And I remember seeing that and I was like, there's got to be a mistake. There has to be a mistake. Even just telling this story right now, I still feel like there has to be a mistake, that maybe they misplaced all my marketing materials, that nobody saw anything that I had. They just heard my music and were like, man, this guy didn't even submit a bio, because I just can't understand how everything was needs improvement. And the reason I could say something like that is seeing that my press photo was needs improvement. I was like, how can my press photo need improvement? This is a photo that we used in XXL magazine. The purpose of having a press photo is to have it so you could submit to a magazine or a publication. So if the biggest hip hop magazine in the world uses this photo, how can it be like terrible for you? So didn't understand it. I'm so mad that I got on the phone and I called up Factor and I was furious. I don't think I even asked to say, who should I speak to? I just unloaded on whoever picked up the phone and I was going in. I spent some time. I mean, a lot of people don't hear me mad, but I put so much work into it that I was just furious because I was like, this doesn't make sense. Now, after going off on the phone, I got to give it up for this woman because she had amazing patience to just listen to me kind of get this off my chest. But then she told me something that I didn't realize. She said, you know, the thing is, we don't actually make the decisions. It's sent out to a jury across the country. So maybe just that jury didn't like it. Or she said, maybe somebody doesn't like you, but it's not us. You know, we don't even know you and it doesn't matter what we think. And that's something I found that I've taken with me from that point, because oftentimes people will blame their failure on other people, on organization. And sometimes they're blaming the wrong people. They're blaming the wrong things. They're blaming the wrong factors. No pun intended. and they don't learn from it because of that. So oftentimes when I talk to artists about grants and I'm like, hey, man, like you got a lot going on. You should apply. Oh, man, they got it in for me. They just don't like me. And just like I said, from my experience, it's usually not that they don't like you. Chances that they don't know you, or there's so many artists that like they just don't have time to have a personal grudge unless you did do something to them. But most of the times it's not that they're mad at you. It can just be just different things that went into it. Who knows what it is? So it's important that when you fail, that you look and find the reasons why, the accurate reasons, instead of just blaming somebody. You know, I didn't get that mark I wanted. It's because of the professor. The professor had it in for me. Well, maybe you should go talk to the professor and realize why you didn't get that mark. I remember for me back in school, I was mad at a professor. And then I realized when I looked through my paper that it was my grammar. My grammar was off throughout it, and that's what set my mark down low. My ideas, great. Grammar, not so good. And grammar is a big part of grants, too, that just the spell check, things like that. If that those basic things aren't done, that could mess up your chances of getting a grant. So that wasn't the end of this phone call. Well, I found that out, but then she said something else. She said, you know what? I really encourage you to submit it again. And I was like, man, I'm done with you guys. I'd spent all this time. And she's like, you know what? Don't spend too much more time. Submit something similar. Maybe touch it up a little bit. But just put it in. Hey, you never know. And so I did it. I put it in again. But this time, I wasn't so psyched up. Last time when I went to mail this offer, I actually drive down to the factory offices, used to do that, and bring it up upstairs, put it on. I remember just walking down their stairs, just like, yeah, you know, I'm on my way, I'm about to get it. But this time, I just kind of dropped it off more business-like. I just put it there, walked downstairs, went on with my day. Didn't think anything of it. A few months pass on. A lot of times with grants, it can take 3 months, sometimes 4 or 5 months. So not even really thinking about it, but I got it. And I remember that feeling when I got it, that all those other times of failing went out the window. I recognized that it just didn't matter. That now that I had won, you don't think about the L's you took. I mean, you can kind of look back at them and smile and be like, yeah, I remember being disappointed. But you're not really thinking about it. You just think, now I got it. And that first grant and the adversity I went through to get it paid off, because just getting in the door is sometimes all you need. That once I got that album grant, I recognized now I can go for a marketing grant. Got that. I could go for a touring grant if I sell enough music. Got that. Sold enough copies. And the video grant that came along with an international touring and some showcasing. And now I'm building up my business and I'm getting business development and business travel. But it all started from that first W, that first win to get me through. And now I recognize how persistence is key. And even when I don't get a grant, because it's not like I always get a grant, now I have a reference point that says, hey, like, it's all good. I remember that other time where I didn't get it, I resubmitted and got it. And that's something I tell artists that I work with. Just recently, I helped an artist get a grant, and we'd been submitting for 2.5 years. Now, at various points in this process, that artist was like, man, I don't think I should submit. And I'm like, don't worry. I'm just going to take care of it. I'm pretty much going to put the same thing through. And I could tell, even when I'm telling him, that he's doubting it. But I have that reference point of knowing that this has worked for me. It's worked for other artists that I've worked with as well, of just being consistent, just putting something out there. You're not going to win if you don't try. And eventually we got it. So now he's got that reference point too. So once you have that made it moment, that's when you realize you could keep doing it. And I think that in the music business nowadays, it's so different than it was 15 years ago, that if you have those three qualities that I mentioned in the first episode, that hunger, hustle, humble, that you can achieve at least some level of success. You don't have to wait for to be a rapper or to be a singer. You can put on your own show. You can press your CD. You can make a video on your phone and put it on YouTube. You can go out to conferences and showcases and learn more about the music business. I mean, you can even do shows in other countries, which as a kid, like, that would blow my mind of thinking that one day I'd perform in Asia. But in my situation, I had a friend who was out there. And sometimes your network is that you might have a friend who's teaching English as a second language in another country, or just went out on a whim to travel a place and now they've stayed there. But if you have a friend in a place, you can hit them up, and that can kind of create opportunities where they could say, hey, yeah, I'm in England now, but I know this local pub. I bet you I could get a show there for you. It's going to be small. And now you could go over there and play a show in another country. So things are way more easier than it used to be. It's not about having somebody else define your success, not about signing a record deal. Last thing I'm going to say before we wrap things up is just how this really came to light for me recently, failure, because I think a lot of success is based on planting seeds. My grandfather was a farmer, and if you plant seeds and follow this analogy, you know that they don't harvest overnight. You don't see that growth every night. And for me, this came true just a few weeks ago, because when I started speaking, going to schools and speaking, I was like, I really want to do it, but the bookings aren't coming along as fast as I want. And I see rappers and singers all the time saying, dang, man, I really want to get into schools and do what you do. But they just don't realize that you have to develop a program. You have to have a message. You got to go hustle it as well. So I hustled things by making a brochure. Instead of a CD, now I got a brochure, and I took it around to schools. So one day in Toronto, I go around to all these schools, maybe went to 12 that day. And it was different than my experience of when I went in Sarnia. Now in Sarnia, it's a smaller town. I grew up there. My mom was a principal. I have an uncle who's a principal. People know them. So I remember that first day of doing it there. I booked like half of the schools that I went to eventually booked me for a show. Whereas now that I'm in Toronto, some days that would happen. But this one day, man, I went to 12 schools. Half the time I'm not getting in to speak to the principal. They're busy. I get it. I'm following up on the phone. Nobody's giving me a call back. It just isn't working out as well. But there's the odd time that day or those few days that I'm doing it that I would speak to the principal and they'd show their interest. So I would follow up. And this one woman in particular, I'd spoken to her and followed up, but she never booked. So fast forward, and around a few weeks ago, when I sent out this booking email to some of the contacts that I made, she emails me back and says, hey, Dwayne, would love to get you in to do a few different shows. And I followed up with her. I double checked the database because I was like, that name sounds familiar. And I see, yeah, I've done work with her before. She booked me back in 2009, 7 years ago. But I also look back in to see when that contact was created. My little database program has that too. So it was in 2007. So I was going out doing my little hustle of bringing my brochure back in 2007. I made notes on my contacts, just little things that I recognized from the conversation to make me remember that person. So it made me put this all together that I was hustling in 2007, planting those seeds. Didn't get those bookings that I thought I was going to get. But 2 years later, I did get that booking from that woman. And now, 9 years from initially making that contact, and now she's contacting me, but she didn't want one show. Now she wanted three different shows. So I had to go through what was kind of a failure at that time of pounding the pavement, not getting the results I wanted. But now I come to realize that it was really just planting the seeds. And that's what I encourage you to do if you're in the music business, to plant those seeds, to release music, to make contacts, to go to festivals and conferences and make contacts, not just thinking that it's going to pay off overnight. But you want to plant the seeds in relationships as well. And in business, it's such a key thing to do to keep on establishing those contacts because you never know where it's going to lead. Don't just look at what's happening now, but plant those seeds for the future. And don't stop believing. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast on failure and getting through that failure. And hopefully you'll do like my man Jay-Z said, succeed in this rap game. Because, man, those are the two things that's great. Oh, yeah.